I'm going to focus on three points. Just as triggers for thought. The first is I'm going to speak about Half Shabbos. Before I speak about Half Shabbos, and I'll explain what that is if any of you don't know, before I speak about Half Shabbos, I'm going to talk about two papers that came out today. One is a position paper by the American Academy of Pediatrics that talks about that the fact that one in five adolescents check their social media site, check Facebook, more than 10 times a day. The vast majority of the population that age is checking it on a regular basis, but there's one in five is checking it constantly, and then they find that those heavy users are at greater risk for depression. So that's one thing that came out. The other thing that's recently come out is something that's being called, I love the name is On Call. Here's what On Call is. It's the finding that four in five adolescents in this country report sleeping with their Blackberries and iPhones next to their beds, always concerned that maybe a call's gonna come in. Of that four in five, an alarmingly high percentage sleep with their cell phones under their pillow, just in case. So you may think, okay, this is kind of harmless, but in a recent paper, pediatricians at Children's Hospital in Boston, one of the leading children's hospitals in the country, report a new syndrome that's coming up a lot, which is kids coming in exhausted. They're not getting enough deep sleep. And they're coming in exhausted and with related stress disorders, and then when they try to get to what's underneath it, it's the fact that they're always on call. So you might think, okay, what's so important that they're always on call? So I'm going to quote to you from their own words, So here it is. A Brookline 10th grader sleeps with her cell phone under her pillow so she doesn't miss emergency texts. So as an example of an emergency text, like if a friend broke up with her boyfriend. Then it quotes a 14-year-old who's also available for urgent overnight correspondence, such as, hey, just seeing if you're awake. Okay, that's important to know. Then they quote some other high school kids who get as many as 100 texts while in bed. And if somebody says, I just don't feel myself if I don't have my phone near me. It's a constant state of being on, constant state of being on alert. Some of you may see people who daven Shemona Esrei, okay, with their cell phone, right, you know, at the ready, you know, just in case something important comes in. I mean, they're davening, and I'm sure they have great kavana, but just in case, there's always like a half an eye out for what might be coming in text-wise. Half Shabbos, we had some data that we analyzed just this last week on 1,200 kids going to modern Orthodox Jewish high schools, and we found, and that we think this is already quite antiquated, we found that one in five in this anonymous survey admitted to texting on Shabbos. One in five. We think it's gotten quite a bit worse since in the years since we first gathered the data. We're hearing from various educators and various modern Orthodox yeshivos that it's probably more like 40%. But one in five are admitting it. Tragic. Why is it tragic? And this is the first main point I want to make. The reason it's tragic, and you'll hear more about this soon, is our Bali Musar have been talking for a very long time about Pizur HaNefesh. Pizur HaNefesh is fragmentation of the soul. Fragmentation of the soul is what happens when we multitask, what happens when we're doing many things at once. And when we do many things at once, we don't realize it, but our stress levels go up. without even realizing it, we're in a state of chronic arousal. And basically, there's not much awareness about what's going on. Rather than show you my slideshow, which I have, but I decided instead to just talk to you guys. This is the one slide I wanted to show you, okay? If you take a look at the slide, the picture on the left, that's the way your brain looks when it's learning Gemara, if you're really concentrating and you're not bottling. That's the way your brain looks when it's reading a book deeply with no interruptions. You're going deep. You're going deep. And you're thinking in a way that doesn't have distractions. You're thinking in a way that is, you don't see the three-dimensional part of this, but it's really going deep in a way that's an art that is getting lost. The picture on the right is the way a brain looks when it's reading the same material on the internet. And you're also checking for texts, and you're also checking maybe a hyperlink, and you're also diffusing your attention in different ways. And you first look at that, it looks like, whoa, that brain is much busier than the brain on the left, but it's not. It's a mile wide and an inch deep. Okay, and that's what all the new research is showing. It's the kids, their stress levels are going up, their connections are going down, the depth of connection is going down, and cognitively, we're getting a serious drop in writing abilities and deep critical thinking skills. The opposite of Pizur HaNefesh, if you look in the Sifrei Musar, is Menuchas HaNefesh. It's what Shabbos is about. Shabbos is about being, not doing. And we need that. We need that. Psychologists tell us that a core need of an individual is to have a place of stillness, to have a place of being, because that's the way Menuchas HaNefesh comes. I'm not going to go into it, but I have some magnificent quotes going back hundreds of years of what our Chazal tell us about how Shabbos is about shutting out our thinking and our connection to the outside world, and the Menuchas HaNefesh, it comes with focus on being as opposed to doing. And so the first take-home message I have is just to make you aware of this. It's to make you aware that there's a cost to having this on at all times. There's a cost to having our attention fragmented. There's a cost to having our brains look like that right brain as opposed to like that brain on the left. So that's take-home message number one, is beware of Pizur HaNefesh. Beware of the superficiality that it's about. I'm not saying that we could possibly get rid of it. Like we just saw, we can't get rid of it. Here's a quote that just came out a couple of weeks ago. Somebody is talking about just the massive change in the last 2 years. In the last 2 years, kids born after 1990 have made a drastic shift. Used to be that half the time when they were connecting with friends, they do it on cell phone calls when it wasn't face-to-face. Half the time was by texting. In a survey that just came out a couple of weeks ago, it turns out the overwhelming majority prefer texting to cell phones. Okay? And that comes to the next 2 points I want to make. So the next point I want to make is about email voice. You know what email voice is? What does this have to do with connection? Email voices, you're talking to a friend, or you're talking to a colleague or somebody you're dating, and you notice that they're there and they're not there. Why? Because you don't really have their attention. It's email voice. They're checking their email while they're talking to you. Okay? It's not that full attention. And you know how you feel when you're talking to somebody and it's their email voice on. You feel like they're not fully present. This Shabbos is Parshas Sechodesh. One of the main lessons of Parshas Sechodesh is lessons about the sanctity of time and the importance of understanding the sanctity of time. And one of the main lessons is the lesson of how important it is to understand that human interaction and connection is kamayim panim el panim kein leiv ha'adam. In this beautiful mamar that Reb Chaim Shmuel Leves has on this week's parsha, he talks about how in order to really connect with somebody, it has to be face-to-face. Moshe's vayar b'sivlosam, it's face-to-face. And this is the second point I want to make. And he talks about how when Yaakov wants to really give a bracha to Yosef's two children, he needs to hold them because he can't see them, to experience them. We need the visual cortex to really connect. We can't connect as well through media. There's something called mirror neurons. I was explaining this to the women last Tuesday night. I'll explain it to you. Because I think it's fascinating and it's important. Here's what mirror neurons are. I'm talking to you like this. So when I go like this, if you had a picture of my brain, like one of those kind of pictures, you would see that a specific motor neuron is firing in my brain that's specifically assigned to going like this. Fine, not so interesting. What's fascinating is all of you who are looking at me, your brains are hardwired so that you too have a specific mirror neuron. And guess what that mirror neuron is going like when I go like this? That specific neuron is going like this. It's new research over the last 5 years. It means we're hardwired to be nosei ba'olam chavero. We're hardwired for empathy. We're hardwired for connection. But it's only with the vayar. It's only with the visual cortex. Now, I'm not saying you can't connect at all through texting with somebody you're very close to. But the primary connection has to be on face-to-face. And that leads me to my final point, which has to do with dating. Tonight was supposed to be more global, but I was also asked to talk about the dating components here. And I'll share with you just for a few minutes some of the new research on decision-making and the internet. And it's something that I'm sure that you've been up against, actually. Let me see. You know what happens to the brain? There's a part in the frontal prefrontal cortex, just where we put the shell roche on every morning, that's in charge of making wise decisions. When we're on the internet and when you're checking out various women on Facebook, okay, and trying to figure out, is this somebody worth going out with? That's the part of the brain that's lit up in part. It's the part that has decision making. But here's what the research shows. The research shows is the more choice you have, the less satisfied you are with the choices that make. And as choice gets to be too much, your decision making starts to get taken over by a different part of the brain. And part of the brain that doesn't think very clearly and that probably makes some foolish choices. There's such a thing as too much information, there's such a thing as information overload, and there's such a thing as just the basic knowledge that the more choices we have, the more likely we are to be unhappy with the choices that we make. So I told the Stern undergraduates last Tuesday night that when Listerine changed the number of choices and flavors in their brand from like 20-something down to 8, their sales tripled. Interesting, right? The less choice you have, the more the sales go up. We do better with less choice. Let me end then with, I guess, my final take-home messages and maybe a story, okay? We could do that? I don't remember if I told this story last week, and I apologize to those of you who might have heard this story, but it's my favorite internet story, okay? And that's the message I'll leave you with. So the bottom line messages, let's summarize. So message number one was the message of that it takes a toll on us if we don't figure out how to replace Pizur HaNefesh with Menuchas HaNefesh at least once a week. But also to be mindful about that during the day. Maybe you could shut your cell phones off when you're in the Beis Medrash. You know, I don't know if that's done, but it's not such a bad thing to just have that, to have that. I remember once years ago when cell phones first came out, I was asked to give a talk at the Torah Masorah conference. And as I was waiting to give my talk, Shmuel Kamenetsky was speaking, and he said, you know, he was talking about cell phones, which then were brand new. He says he doesn't allow cell phones in Philadelphia yeshiva. Because he says if a boy in the Philadelphia yeshiva has a cell phone, he's not a Talmud of the Philadelphia yeshiva. His body may be there, but he says your soul can't be there if you have a cell phone. Because you're always at the mercy of the call. Tremendous wisdom in that. Okay? This is many years ago at the beginning of that technology, and things change and times change. And I'm not saying that we could get rid of everything, but we have to think about and be thoughtful about this. So that's take-home message number one. Take-home message number two was the take-home message about the importance of understanding how this shapes our connections. Beware of email voice. Be present. The need to be present and to figure out a way to be present in our connections. Because otherwise we have a lot of communication without connection. We have a lot of people who are sleeping with cell phones under their pillows so that they could find out very important information like, hey, I'm just seeing if you're awake. Okay? We could live without such information. And the final thing is just knowing that in dating, we have to look at what really matters. We're going to hear much more about this from Rav Willig in terms of his wisdom on this, but we have to look at what matters. And I'll end with a story. Anybody hear the story? Story about the three questions, the Tolstoy short story about the three questions probably not, but with apologies to those of you who have heard it. I went to pay a shiva visit a few years ago to a good friend who's a physician, whose father was nifter after having a wonderful, wonderful career in the rabbinate. He was a wonderful pastoral rabbi, a wonderful Talmud Chacham. He had gotten a smicha here many, many years ago and was a wonderful, wonderful man. I knew him and always admired him. And I'm sitting down at the shiva visit, and into the room walks a distinguished-looking man. He didn't look like the typical shiva visitor. It turns out later that this was a non-Jew who had never paid a shiva visit before, condolence call before. And my friend, who's a doctor, wants to get up to show him respect. He can't believe that this man's there, because this man is the leading cardiothoracic surgeon on the East Coast and maybe even in the United States. People come from all over the world to have surgery with this very, very prominent bypass surgeon. Nobody knows why the man is there, especially my friend. And the man says, look, I don't know what the protocol is for a condolence call. I don't even know what I should do. But when I heard your father died, I felt that I owe him my life, and I had to come here. Everybody's listening. And here's the story he said, and it's the final image I want to leave you with, okay? Story goes like this. Number of years earlier, this doctor was doing surgery in his operating room not too far from here in Manhattan. And his cell phone rings. Even there, cell phones go off. And he gets a call that his younger brother, a 40-year-old man who had never been sick a day in his life, had suddenly died. Okay? He shattered. Because here he's realizing that he somehow missed it. He had no way of knowing. His brother was never sick a day in his life, but after taking bereavement leave, he tries to go back to the hospital job. He can't. With every stitch, he realizes that I failed my brother, I failed my brother, I failed my brother. I'm saving the lives of men well over twice his age. As karma chalona tata, I didn't take care of my own backyard. This is terrible. He gets more and more depressed, and finally he can't take it anymore, and he retires. Not a good idea. My father, who's a retired rabbi, says the toughest thing about retirement is he misses the vacations. Retirement isn't necessarily an answer. And now he really gets depressed. He's going to psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, nothing's helping. Finally, he remembers that 10 years earlier, he had done bypass surgery on a holy rabbi, a holy spiritual man who he just felt must have some wisdom. He felt very connected to this man. It's my friend's father, the man who my friend's sitting Shiva for. And he figures, look, I'm not Jewish, but maybe this rabbi will talk to me. After all, I helped him out when he needed bypass surgery. And he calls the rabbi. He says, can I come talk to you? And the rabbi says, of course, you saved my life. What kind of question? And he goes and he meets with the rabbi. And the rabbi says to him, he says, every human being has a soul that's lit up by a spark. Every human being has a spark. I just remembered I told this story at the Kolo in Marsha, right? Every human being has a soul that's lit up by a spark. He says, you lost your spark. You lost your spark. You have to re-find it. I can't tell you what it is. You have to find it. What is it? You have to find it for yourself. Why don't you go read books during the week? You're retired now. Come and meet with me once a week. We'll go over what you learned from the week, and maybe you'll find the answer for yourself that way. Doctor loves this. And he goes for regular meetings with the rabbi. And nothing's really changing until about 3 months into the process. He comes and he says, Rabbi, I think I have the answer. It's a Tolstoy short story that has as its end the lesson that when you have somebody in front of you, you have to ask three questions. Whenever you have somebody in front of you, question number one is you ask yourself, what's the most important time? The answer is, we know, what's the most important time? Not now, when. Now. Question number two, what's the most important thing when you have somebody in front of you? We know the answer to that. Chesed, to do good. Olam chesed ibana. Question number three is, who's the most important person? And the answer to that is the person in front of you. This somehow reinvigorates this doctor's sense of purpose and sense of meaning. He goes back to the operating room. The hospital is more than happy to take him back. But now, if you traveled to his hospital and you were a fly in the wall when he does surgery, here's what you would see. If you want to operate in his operating room, this is what they do. The whole OR team forms a circle. They hold hands. The anesthesiologist, the nurse clinician, the surgery fellows. And he screams out, what's the most important time? Everybody has to scream out, now. What's the most important thing? Do good. Who's the most important person? The person in front of us, let's operate. And that's, I think, the bottom line take-home message, right? The bottom line take-home message is the message of being present. The message of looking at somebody, being there, and not having the pizur hanefesh, not having the distraction. And that's, I think, the introduction to our next two speakers. I think Charlie's going to introduce them. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you.